Brother Hicks, I have to give you yours, your props as well. When the information's there, you get it out. And that's crucial. We got to keep communicating with one another. Sharing information, what good is it to keep it to yourself? So I appreciate this platform, my brother. Ahmad, did you know this was my oldest brother as well?
No, but I was guessing because I saw the last name.
Yeah. I have to keep him.
He has no choice. He has no choice.
So with that said,
you know, I tell you what, thank you so much. Man, this is so heavy. And Ahmad, I was listening. I turned off my camera. I had to check. I always do a sound check to make sure we're sounding. Broadcast, I want to make sure that our audience is hearing the same thing. Loud and clear, great information. And you have so much information, so many things to talk about, brother. You have to come back soon, real soon, because a lot of times people need to hear things over before they can adapt to it. And there's so much information there that I says, wow, unbelievable. So you're doing some things that I had no idea. I've been a groove for, oh my God, 5 decades. Okay. I pledged when I was 10. Okay. Okay. All right. Anyway, that's a lot. But anyway, we've got to do this. Another one of our panelists, and I haven't heard much from her at all. And that's Tiffany Hilliard. Swing.
Hi, Tiffany.
Tiffany, come on. It's time. Say whatever you want to say. Ask whatever you want to ask. She's one of our regular panelists along with Brother Robert Hicks. I love this brother so much. Brother Mark Daniels. And Robert Hicks, he listens to everything that we do. We're on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And he listens to our music programs and our talk shows and things of that nature. And I want you guys to know right now before it slips my mind, we just set up a brand new YouTube channel. And we activated today just for this program right here. Groove Swing Speaks, and I have some other talk shows that are very, very important, but we just set up a brand new YouTube channel, and just go to Studio W. It's either The Buzz or Studio W Buzz, one of those two, Studio W The Buzz or Studio W Buzz. That's our brand new YouTube channel, and I set this up for a couple of reasons. I wanted to be able to have to exercise all of the major platforms, but not only that, and perhaps we can use this as a tool for fundraising as well. So, Ahmad, I want to talk to you a little bit more about that. Robert Hicks, we got to talk about it. Clayton and Tamika, where is she? Miss Fancy, where is she? Okay, that's my original co-host. And that is, LaToya Yvette. And so I'm sure she may be having some technical problems, but we'll talk more about that. And Ahmad, man, I'm blown away. I'm really blown away. And that's why a platform like this is so important, because we may be able to do things in our own little pockets, but can you imagine if we bring this whole nation together with grooves and swings around the globe? I mean, come on, man. Their power in numbers, I know it is. Tiffany, come on, darling. We got to hear from you.
Well, hello, my brothers, and hola, my sisters.
Hello, Tiffany.
I just wanted to say hello. Please forgive me for my tardiness. I had some stuff I had to take care of. So I don't know all of what was covered, but I did just want to come in and speak. It's been a minute since I seen you two. Probably a few years. I know. I think the last time I saw you, I was back in Baltimore. So I just want to come on and say hello. But yeah, that's it. I'm just listening. I'm listening.
Okay. Well, we would talk about several different things because we opened the broadcast up with Sister Tiffany. And the work that she's doing. So let me just share with this. And Robert, I want you to come on and kind of chime in on after I speak here. And that is, what is the objective? When you're doing anything, it has to be a who, what, where, when, why, and how. Why are we doing this? And I love this organization, and I love the direction that many of our brothers and sisters are doing in so many different chapters. So I thought it'd be a great idea if we share our experience, you know, north, south, east, and west, and come together, and perhaps we'll have some ideas that may inspire, educate, and also we talk about opportunities. There may be something that you know and I don't know, and then I may be inspired to go in a different direction. I might be inspired to start my own business. I might be inspired to join this and jet that or the other, but the value of it and the information that we are learning. And Sister Tamika, when you first came on, well, you know, I just found out something, and I had, and Brother Omar been keeping secrets, and you told me that you guys went to Grambling together. Am I correct about that? And you're really great friends. And I think that you, did you attend his wedding?
Yes. I was in his wedding. I was one of the bridesmaids.
Okay. Well, see, I'm also an investigative reporter here. So I want you to talk about anything, because again, the field that you were in, and Brother Martin, I'm so glad you addressed that. And that is autism and the important work that Sister Tamika is doing. And I want to just tie this all together. And Brother McDougall, I stepped out for a while, but also we want to talk about your other profession that you're doing. I want to get back to that. But Sister Tamika, I want you to share with the audience anything that you would like based on our discussion.
How about this? Sister LaToya did ask me a question before, and I wasn't able to answer it, but she asked me what led me to do what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And it's twofold. The first would be my mother. She she was in the helping field. She was a social worker. Her whole life has been about service. She actually just received an award from the AME Church, a lifetime missionary award for her work with the AME Church. So, you know, I've saw that her life was about service. Anything my mom wanted to do, you know, obviously that was my first role model. That was who I looked up to the most, and I wanted to be just like her. So anything she did, I wanted to do. And she, you know, showed me the importance of a life of service. And specifically why I wanted to work with individuals with special needs was because when I was in the third grade, we lived in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I was in what they called, it's called something else now, but gifted and talented, program. And that was still considered special education. So we rode the small bus, you know, with all the individuals who may have had educational challenges or I guess the traditional special needs or that type of special education. So, you know, I had to learn sign language, and we were paired with individuals that needed help getting to their class. And it really just, I knew from then that I wanted to be a voice for people who didn't have a voice or who couldn't advocate for themselves. So that's kind of what led me to do what I do.
Okay. So. Yeah. I want to go to Brother Mark right now. Brother Mark, I had muted your mic because you were getting a little feedback. Okay, that's better now. Brother Mark, I want you to chime in. Say whatever you want to say, because I think this conversation that we're having tonight is absolutely fascinating. And this is only – is this number seven, Clayton, or is this number seven? I'm not sure how many broadcasts we had before this, but I'm so proud of this. I'm so proud of my sister.
I think
LaToya.
It might be number eight.
Number eight? Yeah. Wow. And we're gaining traction. And Brother McDougall, oh, Crispin Booker, he chimed in too. He said, great work, Perez. And so I'm extending this because this is, we're grooves and swings here. And I want the national and international, on an international level, that we're here. this is a platform that you can put out whatever information you want as far as what our organizations are doing. Okay. And you have so far also, you supported us. You approved us to be able to post when we do, our Groove Swing Speaks. You approve that each and every week. But I want you to know that you have a voice right here, on this network. Okay. I'm passionate about this. We are serious about this. And again, I can't thank, sister, Rock. Because, ladies and gentlemen, a lot of times the people behind the scenes, they don't get the credit that's due to them. And I'm telling you, she is a major, major, major part of what we're doing. And I'm sure, like, Sister LaToya would agree. I'm sure she will. Okay? Mark. Hey, brother.
Yes, sir.
What's your take, brother?
You know, when it comes to the subject of autism, that's very close to me because, you know, I have two people in my life that are autistic. I have my goddaughter, who's now going on 6, and my, I can't say grandson, he's going on 3, is very close to my family. And it's amazing because, you know, my goddaughter is, I mean, she's the world to me, and she's such a creative little girl. And you realistically would not know this, except there are some patterns that I guess go along with having autism. But I'm very supportive of it. I'm very much into wanting to help with that. And, you know, on the other side of it, I think that more people need to get involved and understand because you have some very, very, very talented people who also have this. And it's okay. And I think that's what people have to realize. It's okay because, you know what, there's tools to help people that have this. And in our society for the longest, I feel that if anybody had anything, people used to look down at them and, you know, would put them in a different category. And that can't be the case anymore. Because I know at least with my goddaughter, she's one of the most creative beings I've ever come across. And it's just great that we have the voice here on this platform to be able to speak about it. And I'm just honored to be on here tonight with everybody.
Well, we're absolutely glad. All as usual, Mark is always here. He's a part. He's a panelist as well as brother Robert Hicks, my brother Clayton Brown, Craig. Craig, he's not with us tonight. He has another meeting. Changer. Yeah, you guys know Craig.
Craig Hunter.
I know a lot of you guys know him, and he has another meeting tonight, and it has to do with recruiting. And I want to say this as well. Use this platform that we're doing here, and when you're going out and you're recruiting, this might be a good idea to share this with a younger person that might be considering maybe joining an organization, especially one like this, to let them know that there is Groove and Swing on the move. I'm telling you right now, I couldn't be prouder. I couldn't be more proud of being with this organization. Clayton, did you say? Oh, I want to get to something else right now, and we'll come back. And I've been trying to tie these two together all day. I love to link our conversations around the guests that we bring forth. And Ahmad is also. Ahmad, no one can tell your story better than you can. You're also the divisional director for the Department of Labor in New Jersey. Am I correct?
Correct.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about that, and I'm going to do something else. Robert Hicks, a few weeks ago, he said, William, we need to talk about DEI. You guys already know, okay. I was talking to us about what do you do with the Department of Labor? Is that something that, how does DEI come into play there? And are you in communications with the federal entity? Is there a communication? Just tell us a little bit about that and what you do.
So to start, so I'm the division director or state administrator for the Division of Disability Determination Services within the New Jersey Department of Labor. So I manage four regional offices comprised of 400 employees. We receive applications from Social Security Administration, whether it be Title II or 16, you know, being SSI or SSDI. And we contact the applicant. We set them with doctor's appointments so they can have what's called a consultative exam to determine the level or limits of their disability. And then we have our in-house doctors review the application for the information and the consultative exam, and then make a determination whether they should receive disability benefits or not. So we're basically helping people who are disabled get disability benefits, but we have to go through a stringent process delineated by SSA, Social Security Administration. And so in the realm of DEI, diversity and inclusion, so my department, our governor's liberal, right? So they've been pushing a lot of these initiatives through our department. Personally, it's not hard for me to institute it because I'm already diverse. I'm a black man who leads the whole division. True. So I give everybody an equitable shot at promotions, equitable shot at performance. Everybody gets an opportunity to shine and to improve and to climb the ladder. My personal feelings on DEI is, and this is just me, I know it's a need, but for me, I want it to be more focused on equitable opportunities, right? It's all good to talk about it, right? It's good to train people on it. But if we're being frank, all of us here are grown. We've already grown used to to working in these tough environments. That training's not going to change that. What will change that is being diverse in your leadership, having different people, women, people of color in leadership. That's going to force that change, right? That's the only way to force the change, because you can have a million trainings and 100,000 conversations, but if the leadership still looks like African Americans or women represent 3 or 5%, it's never going to work. It's never going to help, right? People are just going to do it just to say they've done it. But that's my personal look on it, right? I do like some of the programs that they are having through my department. And quite frankly, we do have a number of women and people of color in leadership now. This is all due to the governor, realistically, right? Prior to this, I'm the third black person that's ever had this job in over 50 years.
Wow.
Right? Yeah, so, and that's this job. The job before it, I was the second. The job before that, I was the first. These are all assistant director, and now director. So that's a problem, right? That's yes. A problem. I shouldn't be the first. There's plenty of other people that were qualified before me that looked like me, but they didn't get the opportunity. There's plenty of women that were qualified before me, but they didn't get the opportunity. So the key for me with DEI is give people an opportunity to lead. Give people an opportunity to compete. Because we're listening. That's all we want. We want an opportunity to compete.
That is true.
That is so true. And Robert, please chime in, because I can see how important it is to not only have a DEI programs, but to implement them. Like Brother Omar said, he shouldn't have to be the first after how many years? We talking 5 decades or so?
Yeah,
come on, man.
5 decades or more. The first job, it was 7 decades.
Come on.
Yes, exactly. Because a lot of programs that pretty much we are very qualified, and I must say, definitely, President Amon is definitely in astute. He's very smart. He's very wise in his work. And I would say very qualified. And I thank you for your leadership, sir, first and foremost. But to his point, and to many of our points, who all of us have been in the various different industries, we should not always hear that we are the first of anything at this point. We should have been already the first. What we ought to do is knock down doors. But by doing that, we also are bringing in the people behind us, those of us who are coming into the industry to say, hey, we broke down the door, Now, here's your opportunity to come in behind us and do what you need to do. But that is part of diversity because of the sense of if you have been living under a rock, if you haven't seen specifically, well, our country is really diverse right about now. We have people from all different walks of life. We have people from all different races, creeds, colors, and thoughts and innovations. But also at the same time, we just want basically equal footing. We just basically want to be able to be treated in the same manner. We want to be able to have the same level and not be knocked down a certain amount, certain number of steps.
Yes.
But also, we just want to be able to be included in everything that's happening. Because if we're separated, then you really don't really have, and to the people out there, you really don't have what we are looking for in regards to the way things are moving, have to be able to move forward in this country. To be inclusive is being able to bring in all thoughts, all ways of life, to be able to make sure that we have everybody accounted for. Who do we do it for? The people. And if we, that's just like the song from Common. But also, you have to realize the communities that you're living in. Who are the people around there? Mm-hmm. If you've seen them recently, it's pretty diverse, especially in a few cities that you live in. So I would say it's important to make sure that we are representative of the demographics of the people in that area. And as Clayton and I like to say, that's our $19.62.
Well,
thank
we
you.
Appreciate both of your input on that. I would like to ask or direct this towards Sister Tamika, because earlier you and Amara was talking about people not only having special needs, but they are highly intellectual or have these gifts that nobody else know nothing about. Because I am a brother of, I guess I'm a spiritual brother, but I'm also an artist. I'm a portrait artist, I'm a creator. So some people may have looked at me differently as I was growing up as well, because I didn't do things the way other people did. But tying into what Brother Amar was talking about, being diverse, I'm pretty sure, Sister Tamika, you had to deal with that on another level, having to try to coach artistic children to be accepted, to be inclusive, to feel like they are needed just as much as anybody else. Because could you tell us a little bit about how they express that to you as a professional?
Well, I would say that the individuals that I've had the pleasure of working with and throughout my career, they're not particularly aware that people may think that they're different, you know, or that they may, or I don't even like to say different, but you know, that it's not, they may not do things by the social norm. I think that it's important, especially in this day and age, that, like you said, we should be more inclusive.
Yeah.
You know, if someone chooses to, because at the end of the day, like what really are, who's to say what's normal?
Yeah,
who's to say,
that's what I'm
who's
getting to
say what we should be, you know, so if there's an individual, one of my individuals wants to wear, you know, a red top and you know, something, you know, odd that I may consider as odd, that, you know, hey, that's what you want to do. So I think it's more about the larger group being more inclusive and accepting someone that may do things that are a little different than what you may do, as opposed to having them adjust to everyone else. You know, that's the way that I look at it, you know. And as I said, the individuals that I've had the pleasure of working with, they're not really that concerned or acutely tied into the fact that people may look at them as odd. They just don't recognize that. So there's not a lot of that like coming to me and saying, hey, I don't think I fit in. What can I do? They don't, and I would love to feel that. I feel like that's a kind of a freedom, if you will, to not really care about what other people think about you.
Right.
You know, and if you fitting in, they're going to be who they are regardless. And I think that's a very special and unique, attribute of individuals on the spectrum.
And that is so true, because our society is so well known to group people into a category. Because you and Amar was talking about artists. Now, being an artist, I studied that. Now, we got Salvador Dali, you know, famous Spanish painter. You have Van Gogh, well known for his artwork. But Van Gogh, he had that mindset, was too intelligent, as some people would say. He ended up cutting his ear off. Okay, you got Salvador Dali, how he painted his pictures. It was almost like he was in a daydream all day long. He would stare at a wall until images start to distort or come to life, and he would paint. I can see that sometimes, because sometimes I'm in a daydream. Reality is not what other people may think their reality is. But we're all out here trying to be accepted. And so,
you know, and I agree with that too, because society, for as long as I can remember, and perhaps as long as the panel can remember, set norms,
right?
A standard of beauty. And when you saw, and then if you see something over and over and over again on TV, for years, you've had beautiful black models that were excluded. They weren't shown. Okay. You had so much genius, especially from our cultures, that it wasn't exposed. Right. And let's come down to what it's all about. We're talking about the 5 percenters that control the wealth.
Well,
okay. And they can control what you see on media. Okay. And what people see, they tend to want to emulate or copy. And like you said, Sister Tamika, I was listening, that let's say for someone wants to put on a red shirt and something else, that, good Lord, man, why you walk out on that? But guess what? That's what they wanted to wear, okay? I remember seeing on Facebook one time, it was Easter, and his brother jumped out all pink, all right? And had a pink Volkswagen. You know, and that brother thought he was clean. And guess what? In his mind, he was. Quick story and true story. I remember being in the fifth grade, and there was a young man that sat next to me, a student, Sydney. His name was Oscar. And Oscar was failing in practically every class. I mean, every subject. However, he had a drawing pad. And this brother could draw anything, and he used pencil. And his creations, Clayton, remind me a lot of yours, you know, that he could take a pencil and just make that picture jump off of the page. The tragic part of it is, the next year, I saw Oscar on the street corner. He had dropped out of school. So, as an educator, Ahmad, Tamika, Robert, Levette, Clayton, and Tiffany. How can our educators be missing, you know, a genius over here, but yet, because he's not great in math or history or whatever it is, we have to recognize talent where it is.
I think it's because they was not prepared for it before, but now...
Are they prepared now?
I believe so. I think they're training more of the professionals now to be able to understand what it takes to be able to bring those people up, educate them. They know how to, I wouldn't say handle, because that's a bad word, to handle somebody, but to guide them into society. At one point in time, I don't believe that the educators was prepared to deal with an autistic child.
Okay, now
they didn't know what it was all about.
Well, that's a great point. However, I want to go to Sister Tamika on this. How many of our brilliant autistic children have been ignored or it has not been recognized as such? Because I think if the problem was solved, then Tamika wouldn't be in the business that she's in. Tamika, I want you to address that. You know more about this than I do.
Mm-hmm.
How many are people, the geniuses? I mean, do you think that that with the education system is now, do you think they are on the mark or have they missed the mark or please?
Right. I think that if we're talking about your standard education, you know, which obviously there are individuals on the spectrum that go to school like you or I would, you know, if you think about your school career, like elementary, high school, you may have recalled a very withdrawn, quiet person. They like, you know, they were very smart. They were probably in a lot of, you know, AP classes or advanced, you know, types of situations, but they just were kind of awkward or quiet or withdrawn. Mm-hmm. That person was probably on a spectrum. I don't think that they were probably ignored. They were probably, you know, celebrated for having high test scores and excelling. Where you would probably see, not even necessarily ignoring or maybe them not able to tap into that individual's special talents is when there's behavioral issues. And that's unfortunate, you know, because before you can even get to educating, before you can even get to seeing those things, you have to deal with having that person prepared to learn. And if someone is having a tough time sitting still or being able to pay attention or they're, you know, just having challenges in general in that respect, that's where you'll probably start to see a disregard, especially if they're a child of color. Mm-hmm. They're immediately going to slap a label and say that they're not able to be taught or anything, you know, and that we can go into a whole other situation with that. But that's typically where you will start to see where educators may start to disregard students that could otherwise be very great students is if there's a behavioral issue that they can't deal with.
Okay. Let me follow up with this. Let's say there is a behavioral issue with that particular child. Mm-hmm. How many of those children, going back to something I asked earlier, have been placed on medication versus therapy or someone taking the time to say, okay, we understand that this is a different person. We need to deal with this differently. I know that so many, and it depends on the system that you're in. Sometimes you have lazy educators or you have lazy therapists or whatever it is. And in the past, we know that they have prescribed drugs instead of therapy for their child and a better understanding of who is this person or who is this child that I'm dealing with. Is that what you think is an issue? Is it prevalent or is it something that that could happen occasionally?
Yes, right, absolutely. I mean, there has been, and it, you know, there's also a myriad of other things that we could be talking about, you know, ADHD, you know, all kind of different things that have nothing to do with, you know, autism, but I'm not necessarily against medication. I think that you should do a true assessment and see if you can do any type of environmental changes. Mm-hmm. If you can, you know, because sometimes there may be a need for some type of medication, like, you know, we spoke about earlier. You know, there's not medication that will treat autism.
Right.
Because that's not something that you're going to ever treat in that manner. Mm-hmm. But there are, you know, the unfortunate things that may come along with that, which is anxiety, which is OCD, those types of things, right. Simply because of the social piece that's missing. But, you know, I think that oftentimes, especially children of color are are labeled and given medication without due diligence, without exploring, you know, different learning environments, without exploring, you know, things that could potentially help them without just automatically medicating them.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And that, I think you just answered my question, because then you have someone who is not trained or properly trained or ill-trained, whatever it is, and they could judge an autistic person with someone who has that may need that medication. Mm-hmm. That, and I think that's the point that I'm making. And all right, let's go around. Ahmad, what's your take and anything you want to add? Ahmad? Okay, your mic is muted.
I thought it was about the education system needed significant improvement. I would say, so not speaking to autism specifically, but to children that need child risk team or something like that, depending on what state you're in. I feel like there's a lot more special education teachers. I feel like there's a lot more special education teachers that are of color, I mean, just by people that we know, either in our organization or in our communities. So it kind of goes along with the DEI conversation, is that the teaching force would only benefit to reflect or mirror the people that they're teaching, the people that they serve, right? And so when you take, touching on what Robin was saying, when you have a diverse collective of opinions of people that are all invested in serving that particular population, you're going to get better, stronger, more sustainable solutions. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're still at the point where we need more of the community, what the community looks like, involved in decision-making around education across the board, right? If you think about children that may be on the spectrum that are high performing, and you juxtapose them with children that are having struggles in their home life, right, which relate to behavioral issues as well, what are the schools investing in, right, in order to provide them that extra level of care? Are you providing experiences for them? When you engage a child with an experience, that can have a direct reflection on their behavior. We dealt with kids, worked with kids through GLA. We took the kids that were on Saturday detention, right, because that's what the school would allow us to work with. After 2 weekends with us, these kids were no longer on Saturday detention, right?
Absolutely.
Because we engaged them with activities that they enjoyed and encouraged them to do better. And then you hold the accountability. If you want to do this and then go even further, then you need to act accordingly in class. So then we tell them we're going to Morgan, we're going to Lincoln, we're doing this and doing that. I want to go. Okay, I want you to go. But you need to act accordingly in class. And so it's about bringing the accountability to the table. It's about bringing diverse ideas and bringing the children experiences that will not only encourage them, but will empower them and give them opportunity to grow.
Absolutely. It's no question about it. Susie, hey, Mark. Mark is back in, but I want to go to Mark, and then, but I want to go to Brother Robert. Robert, you got your finger on your chin, so there's something going on there, brother.
Thank you. I'm always contemplating. I'm always thinking, and the understanding the situation of what's going on with the educational system, especially with dealing with not just autistic children, but sometimes the children could be just bored and they want a challenge. Schools, in some cases, they're not challenging it hard enough, and in which case then it's important for the schools to probably to elevate the to reach the child's mind and even stretch a little bit further, or else the child is going to feel like, oh, why do I have to go to school here? But I will say that also is intuitive of the teacher understanding what is going on with that student. My experience back in sixth grade, And I was in a class and I was doing mathematics and I was just bored. Mm-hmm. But then a teacher, her name was, I want to say Mrs. Gish, I want to say, but she introduced me as a sixth grader to an eighth grade math book. And then basically the idea was being able to stretch my mind a little bit more. I did work which was different from the students. Mm-hmm. But there was something that the students saw in me, that the teacher saw in me, that wanted to be able to do something different. And that should be the same way by understanding the students who are there in the schools. That they'd be able to say, hey, I see something in you, or you've got something here. And I want you to be able to become your best, mm-hmm. be excellent, no matter what people think that your handicap would be. I won't say that, it's probably a bad word, but what your obstacle could be. But people overcome obstacles every single day. And I think the one thing that we have to understand is we've got to be able to support teachers and to sometimes integrate ideas into schools that will bring about the best in their student. And sometimes it could be the idea of just doing something a little bit different, because when it comes down to a classroom, the teacher initially has a certain amount of students. They have about 30 students. They have to get a lecture going. Mm-hmm. But realizing 30 students, 30 different learning styles. So you have to be able to eventually say, okay, now Robert, come here. Okay, Tiffany, come here. Because there's something a little bit different. Maybe you have a different learning style, or maybe you just need something which is going to stretch you to your excellence, to your peak. And that's something that is important. And need people who are really focused within not just the school systems, but also the boards of education, sitting in the meetings and understanding what's going on. Mm-hmm. These are important when it comes down to making sure that our children and generations thereafter are going to be their best.
You know, that's the sign of a skilled teacher, to realize that you in a classroom, you got 30 people. They're all different in some way, okay? And you might have some that might stand out in certain aspects of their learning. And so to be able to say, okay, this person, I might have to teach them a little bit differently, or I might need to pay attention to this particular student's skills and maybe their pace of learning and how they adjust to these academics. But Tiffany, you have a question.
Yes, I do. It is to our guests, both Tamika and Ahmad. My question is, do you guys think, and I don't know which ones you've been doing the longest, which is educating or being around students or being a part of Swing Groove, but do you think that being a part, and this is a really elementary question, but sometimes some of the simplest questions do have a, can have a compounding effect to it. Do you believe that being a part of Swing and Groove has helped you with working with people who have different challenges or gifts, or vice versa, working with people that have different challenges and gifts, have helped you work with people that are in Swing and Groove?
Tamika, you would like to go first? Ladies first?
Sure. So I've been a part of Swing longer than I've been in the field. So that, you know, that's that part of the question. I've actually just, well, not just, but in December, I had my 25th anniversary of being a member of this organization. I've been, but I would say that, I think that being a part of this of Swing Fi Swing has allowed me to explore different parts of myself in terms of being a leader, you know, being following, learning. I think I don't know if it's necessarily helped me in this specific part of my career, but I think just, as I said before, just being, of service, that's something that, you know, since the beginning of being a part of this organization, and what led me to it is, you know, from serving my campus and just being of service of, you know, doing things for my community and trying to, the upliftment of my community and also being an advocate for people, who may not necessarily be heard all the time. So that, I guess that kind of, you know, parlayed into that, but that's something that has always been a part of me. So which made Swing attractive to me as well as, the line of work that I'm in.
Awesome.
Hopefully I answered your question.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Brother Omar.
Yeah. So for me, I come from a long line of public service, all aspects of my family, and they all provided their service in their own way. My father was a revolutionary. He worked with the Panthers, served that way. And my mother also served with the Panthers as well. My grandmother served with nurses, right? She served with nurses in a time period when we couldn't necessarily get good care in hospitals. So the nurses, they used to come to your house and serve you in the community. So they had their way. Groove is mine. This is somewhat of a laboratory where I can try out the things that I think may work or help the community.
Right.
And I also listen to brothers who are similarly interested in the same things and get ideas from them and try different services, because it's never about one individual personal group, it's about all of us. So while I may want to focus on one thing, another one of my brothers wants to focus on another, and another wants to focus on another. So if I'm being the group and being true to group, I'm at all of those services, and I'm learning and being edified by each experience. So for me, being able to lead in that realm, a lot of times you don't get that opportunity, but Groove created an opportunity for me to lead, even down to the point of leading a community service. When you're in a chapter, you say, I want to give haircuts to kids in this community. The chapter president will tell you, well, go figure it out, make it work, and then bring back the information to us. So even that, in the micro level, you're still getting opportunity, a laboratory, a place where you can lead, and then build up your leadership, modifies and qualifications, so you can then go on to lead at a broader scale. So most of my leadership skills came from Groove, from listening, learning, and having opportunity. I got a significant amount from my parents and my family as well before I got here, right? But I must attribute a large amount of it to Groove and Swing, because they gave me the opportunity to try, the opportunity to fail, the opportunity to succeed, the opportunity to plan, the opportunity to serve on a grand scale. So I definitely think that, me personally, I definitely go with what Tamika says. This definitely helped me along the way, especially when it comes to service to people. When you look at, and this is the last point I make on this, because this is a thing I always mention, I feel as if Groove is Uber to heaven, right? Right. Now, if you live by what the founders have set up, if you live by the conduct that you're supposed to portray, and then you also serve, just because that's what you're supposed to be doing, you're going to be doing more than a lot of people that are not in the organization. If you look at some of our friends who are with the college with us, who we love and appreciate, if they're not part of an organization, 8 times out of 10, they're not serving like we are.
That's right.
Because it's intended to who we are and what we are. So it forces you to serve. It forces you to be impactful and useful to your community.
That's right.
I always think that's an important point. That we're forced to do this because this is what we say we are. This is the organization that we're in. So it's a blessing in both ways. A blessing to the community, and a blessing to your own soul to be able to give to others.
I couldn't agree more, you know, and I tell you, And I'm looking at the panel that's here now with you, Sister Tamika, and Brother Ahmad, Brother Robert, Mark, Tiffany, and Latoya. I'm sure she'll be back at some point in time. She may be having some IT problems there. My brother Clayton, and he mentioned earlier about, and he takes his time out, and he goes out and serves the communities, you know, with the food banks and things of that nature. And we have brothers around the city that does that. And, you know, that to me is honorable because a lot of people will not take their time to help and serve someone else, you know. And I tell you, and I with the broadcast that we're doing right now, and my objective of doing this is to serve, to bring out information that's going to be helpful to our communities. So I need each and every one of you out there to share this network with your family and your friends. And if you miss part of this broadcast, you won't hear it again, go to studiow.buzz, studiow.buzz, and click on archive shows, because to me, I'm just a Mark. I am just so grateful to be part of this. I'm so grateful that I have the opportunity, or have been given the opportunity, to do this. I'm grateful to my sister Rock, because we sit down and we brainstormed a little bit on, okay, how are we going to put together this new Groove Talk Radio? And came up with the title Groove Swing Speaks. I'm grateful to everyone on this panel. You, Tiffany, we're going to come back again and talk about what you do. And we're going to talk about those things right there, because I find everything's fascinating. Mark, we all have a story, and we can contribute a little bit. Can you imagine if the village came together, if the community came together, if Grooves and Swings came together around the globe? I mean, we're talking about a force that you have to, can't be reckoned with, because we all...
While we're on that subject, excuse me for cutting across.
Go ahead.
But I want to give a shout to local brothers, Brother Everett Phelps. He is the president of the Richmond Grad Chapter. And also fellowman Craig Hunter, who is the president of Virginia Union Virtual Alumni Graduate Chapter, mm-hmm. Panther One. We collaborate on these things all the time, coming together, because we don't have the physical bodies here. So.